90.3 867 1190
Near FM.
First up, we have Fiona Hurley, who is recently appointed CEO of the Migrant and Refugee Rights Centre. Good morning, Fiona. How are you?
Good morning, Michael, and thank you for having me on.
Absolutely delighted to have you on. Fiona, maybe we can start off, if you give us a little bit of your background, and also, you know, what's the work of the Migrant and Refugee Centre?
Thanks, Michael. So NASC, the Migrant and Refugee Rights Centre, we're an NGO. We're based in Cork. We're a national organisation. We were founded in May 2000, so we've been around for over two decades now. And our work is with migrants, refugees and asylum seekers. So we provide information and advocacy to people on their immigration status, assistance to people with concerns around visas, for example. We have quite a mixture of people coming to us. It could be people who are, you know, here as nurses or doctors who want to bring their children or their partners to Ireland. To refugees who are looking for family reunification. We also are Irish citizens who've met a partner while abroad and want to return together to Ireland with them. To assisting people with queries around direct provision. And of course, more recently, we've been doing a lot of work with Ukrainians who have come to Ireland.
Oh, now, I'm sure you're, when you mentioned Ukrainians coming to Ireland, I'm sure you're very busy at the moment with over 40? Is it close to 40,000 people?
I think 43,000 now, Michael. Yeah. The numbers are going up.
You know, it's just shameful what's going on in Ukraine, and these poor people being forced out of their own country is terrible thing. But it is for anybody who has to leave their own country, you know, whether it be for economic reasons or other reasons. It's a tragedy, and a country like Ireland knows that just so well from our own past.
Oh, well said, Michael. I think it's really important for us to look at our own history. You know, we have a huge diaspora across the world, and Ireland would be a very different place if we didn't have the support of our diaspora, if we hadn't had the ability to immigrate from Ireland.
Indeed, and I know from my work here in Near FM, I do some music programs, and I can tell you that if we didn't have people coming in from other countries into Ireland, our music scene would be so much different. So the people coming in have added so much to the flavour of our music industry. It is just incredible. People like Tula McKay, they've just changed things around. They've brought a new energy to it. It's absolutely fabulous, and our music industry is thriving at the moment. Now, I know COVID and all that was bad, but the actual energy within the industry is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's so important. You know, you talked about music, and I think it's really clear there. It's the different sounds, the different energy, and how that blends with existing like Irish music traditions as well. Food is another place where, you know, we can see how much richer it is to have, you know, people working in restaurants, people setting up businesses. And I think, you know, we've seen people who are just incredible entrepreneurs who, having faced massive hardships, come to Ireland, had to apply for asylum, gone through direct provision. And then, you know, even during COVID, setting up food businesses, setting up restaurants, setting up, you know, whether that was, you know, box carts or coffee stations. I think there's a real hope in people for the cultural life in Ireland.
Indeed there is. Now, to get back to you and your new position, what I'm going to ask you is, what's your vision for the Migrants and Refugee Rights Centre? What's your vision going forward for it?
So our vision as an organisation is for an inclusive and equal Ireland that respects the rights of all refugees and migrants. And it's a very broad, overarching statement, but we want to be part of making a difference, whether that's at an individual level to the clients that we serve, but also at a national level, being involved in policy. We're very much involved in developing kind of national programs. Like historically, NASC has been very involved in bringing things like community sponsorship to Ireland. That's a program where communities can come together and sponsor a refugee family who's currently waiting for resettlement on a long waiting list somewhere like Lebanon or Jordan to come to Ireland. And that's something we're very proud of, and we want to continue that work of changing creating pathways for people to come to Ireland. And one of the things that we're involved with at the moment and we're very excited about is a new program. It's a pilot project. We're working with organizations in Italy and Belgium on this as well. It's creating pathways for people to come through education and employment pathways to Ireland, particularly refugees, people who are in kind of countries that are sometimes overlooked for resettlement needs, and who otherwise could be waiting for 20 plus years for a resettlement. There are some people who will be waiting for a resettlement place but never otherwise get a resettlement place. So we're really excited about the opportunities offered for that. But also, we also want to very much be part of the work on ending direct provision in Ireland. That's going to be a huge challenge over the next few years. There's been the white paper on ending direct provision by 2024. Obviously, at the time that was written, no one could have foreseen what would happen in Ukraine. We also need to look at how we continue to serve the needs of existing migrants and refugees in Ireland. People who've been here for 5, 6 years or 10 years have quite different needs to people who've been here kind of more recently. And on top of all of that, we also need to look at how we are serving the needs of kind of our more recently arrived Ukrainian population as well. Really key challenges there. A lot of the more recently arrived people have come from areas where they've experienced, severe conflict, or they've maybe witnessed or have experienced themselves torture, or war crimes, for want of a better word. So really, again, very significant kind of mental health needs here, and we have to ensure that we are trying to support those communities as well. So a very broad range of challenges coming up.
Indeed, and like every good CEO, you went straight into WE.
I'm lucky to have a fantastic team that we work with and a incredible community around us as well.
Now, I'm going to push you on this, is that, yes, I understand all those things, but you as CEO, what do you want to be, the thing, your legacy when you leave? What do you want people to be able to say about you, what you've done?
I would like to be part of the solution on direct provision. I think that is just such a stain on the Irish reputation. I think it's really clear that the Irish community don't feel it is acceptable. We've been through so many reports, we've heard from so many people with first-hand experience of just the impact that it has on them and their families. So an incredible achievement, and no one's going to do this themselves. These are huge systemic problems that need multiple partners to do. But being part of that solution would be just an incredible incredible to do and to be part of, and it's something that's so needed at the moment.
Yeah, I have to say I'm delighted you said that, because I always think I'm laughing about it, because I just find the direct provision system so stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, I would come from a business background.
Yeah.
And from a business background, if I were to put something together, you know, to support refugees and migrants coming in, the very last thing I would do, the very, you know, the worst thing I could do of all the ideas I would have, is actually what we have at the moment.
Oh, absolutely.
It is just so
stupid. No one would create now.
No. Yep. You know, I don't even think create now. You know, I'd have to go back and say whoever thought of it and then decided we're going to stick with it. It's ridiculous. It costs so much money. It costs so much money to run. It destroys people's lives. It destroys their enthusiasm. Like the idea of, you know, people not being allowed to work and earn a few shillings and then being given, I don't know what it is, they're given a 20-euro note or something. That's for yourself for the week. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and look, we have moved on slightly from that. Now that people are allowed to work, and that's been a hugely empowering thing for people, and it has meant that the transition afterwards is just is easier because people have links in the community. Like, we know ourselves as adults, like how many of your friends are friends from work? Like, it's where you meet people, it's where you socialise, and it's how you integrate for a lot of people. And it takes them out of the centre. You know, during the day, you have something practical and active to do, and we know that people want to be busy, and we know that people want to contribute. But there's no reason that should have taken 18 years and a Supreme Court challenge to come through.
Absolutely,
you know,
not.
That's been recommended for so many years.
The stupidity of it is that, you know, of having to have a Supreme Court challenge to something that's costing the state a fortune that they should have been looking at changing.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
To make it more affordable, so you can actually do more for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and target things where they are needed for people who can't work for whatever reason because they have, you know, care responsibilities or they're unable to work because of a disability. But we do need to look at how we continue to make progress in this area, and we can't be stopped by the fact that, look, you know, 40,000 Ukrainians is a huge challenge, but we need to be able to, I suppose, walk and chew gum at the same time. We need to be able to look at more than one thing at a time, and we have made commitments to people in direct provision. We've made commitments under the white paper, and we need to ensure that we're following through on those.
And the only way we're going to do that is that the system itself goes from a system that says, no, you can't do that, it's just, how can we?
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be a mental change within the people administering the system to, how can we do these things?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, no, we can't.
Yeah, and I think we've seen kind of a positive attitude to, like, how can we get things done with, you know, with Ukraine, and we can actually learn some of those lessons.
Absolutely,
and
implement
them.
Yeah,
like things like ensuring that people get PPS numbers quickly. That's something that could be just applied to everyone. Like, there should be no reason why anyone should have to wait for months for a PPS number. And we don't just hear this from asylum seekers, we hear this from people who are coming to Ireland for work purposes or people who are joining Irish family members. Like, you know, that bureaucracy, if it can be waived in one instance, it can be waived in other instances.
Indeed. I'll give you a kind of an example something that is similar within a business context. If you have a bill, you know, an invoice comes in and you deal with that invoice. Each invoice in a business, an invoice normally costs about a tenner to deal with, to process. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think of every time there's an interaction between somebody a migrant or an asylum seeker and the state, that that is an invoice coming in. It costs a tenner because it has to be processed and that. So the idea of not giving someone a PPS number or dealing with it straight away, maybe having them to get in contact 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, is just multiplying the cost of dealing with somebody, of looking after someone.
And it creates, as it creates work but you know, there's also the impact on the individual as well. So, you know, we really need to be looking at like efficiencies and things that could be like easy wins that would materially make a difference. We also have a population of children in direct provision that don't get child benefit payments. You know, like we think of ourselves as a country that tries to look after children, at least, and a good place for children to grow up. But we are excluding categories of children, including children who might have Irish citizenship, whose parents might be an asylum seeker, and because of that are living in direct provision.
I've noticed children, I've seen children who've been here for, you know, maybe a 16, 17, 18 year old who's been here for 13, 14, 15 years of their life, and then suddenly I've gone through the schooling system, but they're not eligible to go to university.
Yeah, we've done a large project on that last year. Mm-hmm. We've worked with children, especially children who came into the country perhaps legally with their parents. Relationship with the parents broke down or something happened to one of the parents and the child is taken into the care of the state and might have been in foster care from the time that they were 8, 9, and, you know, think of themselves as Irish. They've grown up quite possibly in an Irish household. And then at 18, suddenly they find themselves with, perhaps they may have an immigration permission, but with very little support and can't access third level education. And they don't know what to do because it's the first time on becoming an adult that they're suddenly treated very differently. And these kids who don't have family support, who, you know, can't go to, like, you know, mum or dad and say, hey, can I get a loan to go to university? And are very much left to fend for themselves. So there's a lot of areas here that we need to work on.
Indeed, Fiona, I have to say, I don't envy you the task ahead, but I'm sure it will be enjoyable. I'm sure you'll love it, and I wish you all the very, very best.
Michael, thank you so much.
Indeed. And maybe, if you wouldn't mind, tell the listeners if there's anyone out there who may be in need of your services, or maybe somebody out there who would like to support you, where they can get more information or maybe even get in touch.
Brilliant. Well, the best place to have a look is our website, so naskireland.org, so NASCIRELAND.org. And you can also find us at the same handles on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram.
That's great, Fiona. What I will do is I will put some of those links onto the podcast of the interview and I'll send it on to you.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great day. And once again, congratulations and I wish you all the best.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Michael.
Take care.
As well.
All the best. Slán. Bye-bye. There we go. That was Fiona Hurley, and she is the newly appointed CEO of the Migrant and Refugee Rights Centre. And I have to say, they do brilliant, brilliant work, and because there is a need out there to give our system here in Ireland a bit of a jolt to get it working properly. And it could, if it was working properly and running smoothly, it could make so many people's lives so much easier and cost us less.
Text 087 69 44 500.
90.3 Near FM.